Blog Talk
Let's
Radio.
Let's do it. Oh, yeah. I said, oh, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah. Welcome to Empowerment Saturday, African-American Empowerment Saturdays. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. Marvin Rome and a crew. We got Brother Kevin Land back in the house. Brother George with the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment. And much, much more. You don't want to miss it. Call a friend. Tell somebody about African-American Empowerment. We're one team, one group, one family, going in one direction. Is no greater love than for self and kind, brothers and sisters. No greater love. Welcome to African American Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of you know what for you know who, right? It's all about African American empowerment. It's all about helping us help ourselves. And if you track our history, right, that's all you got to do, right, of the group of African Americans, a.k.a. Negroes, a.k.a. colored, a.k.a. black, and so many more, the other N-word, right? That is the group that we're focusing our attention upon, right? And if you are a descendant or if you are in the family, welcome. Come on in. All right, everybody, welcome, but you know what I mean. This show is specifically for black people, right? People of color, African-American descendants of American slavery. You're probably asking yourself, why? Right? Here's why. Because we need help. All you have to do is just look around the country at every city, right, in every state, in every town that we are in, and look at the condition. Now, some of our people are doing good. If you are, then that means that you need to reach back and find somebody, right? You need to find some kid, some family, some parent to mentor, to foster. You're going to have to help out now. If you've made it past the threshold where you're doing okay mentally, physically, emotionally, socially, culturally, spiritually, and financially, then get on board, reach back and grab somebody and bring them along. Why, do you ask? Because we need to look at how we can become effective in this country, right? Why? Because of our history. No other group has been in enslavement in this country. No other group has been marginalized as bad or as damaging as our people. It's just true. And no other group has withstood every blow that this country, this government, and other agencies like racism has done to keep us down, put us down, and keep us down. So here is the political agenda for the NAAE. I'm going to spell out peace. And Brother Kebeland is going to talk about politics and economics today, which are tenets of the NAAE. So here we go. Buckle up. Politics. We need a political agenda. I will say it every week. Politics, politics, politics. You got to become political. You got to become strategic. You got to understand how American politics work and then navigate around this system and become effective at doing the things that will help us to get the resources that we need to help educate, develop, motivate, and empower our people. That is what you must do. You must learn the political system and the nuances of the system that will help you, right? If that means voting, if that means understanding the law, if that means understanding the justice system, all of those things, policing, all of those things matter, and we're going to have to become effective at managing those systems. Next is the E, economics. We have to have an economic agenda, economic development for prosperity and abundance. We must continue to work on ourselves to develop a economic platform that looks at how we can continue to pour resources into our institutions that's going to help our people help themselves. It's nothing wrong with that, right? But we have highly, highly organized schools, for example, that our children go to where they can develop on their own and in their own way and in the best ways possible. You want to be able to put your children in position to be successful. I'm talking about African-American children who understand the importance of their culture, who understand who they are and develop those children. Next is the A. This is for all of us. We have to have an athletic agenda, which is health, wellness, fitness, nutrition. mental health, physical health, and emotional health. We're going to have to be well again. We're going to have to heal from some of the traumas that have come our way. And there's nothing wrong with the healing process. But also, let's look at how we can help ourselves in a couple of areas inside of VA. That is health and wellness, right? Are you taking care of your body? Are you eating healthy? Are you eating right? Are you doing those things necessary to take care of your temple or your physical body? What about your emotional health, right? Are you taking care of your mental health? Are you relaxing? Are you taking breaks? Are you taking time to yourself? Are you reducing stress? Those things are important. And you're going to have to continue to regulate and manage and be in control of those areas really well. Next. It's the C, which is relevant cultural programs that help educate us and get us to knowing who we are, where we come from, and where we're going. Those things matter, right? Culture matters. Culture matters. And so we have to have strong cultural programs that develop us, enhance us, chin up, chest out, so we can be proud going forward. So when people look at us as African Americans, they can say, hey, that group has really got themselves together. We're going to have to band together with organizations as well. And so the last tenet is education, and we must have a comprehensive education that uses these tenets or utilize these tenets and much, much more. There's no other way that we're going to do it except doing it ourselves, right? Nobody's going to pay in for us. We're going to have to do it ourselves, and we're going to have to do the work of working on ourselves today and every day. That's the tenets of the NAAEA, www.naaea.weebly.com. Go out there, check us out, and now for the Stan Macklin moment.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing. But we must unify. Let's not sabotage ourselves. We should not look as to what we can't do. We can do all things. We can. We can do it. And so we got to quit trying to mimic other races and be who we are, original kings and queens, and make a difference.
I like that.
Right here on earth.
Brother Stan is so right. Are you committed to making a difference? Now, I'm not saying you got to go and trek the world to try to make that difference, but just in your family or just within yourself or just within the people around you or just in your community, begin to do the work of working on yourself mentally, physically, emotionally, socially, and culturally. We're going to have to do that. No more getting in to fit in, right? It's a way that we can do it where we can become representatives of the great people that we are, right? Not in a negative way, right? But in a good, strong, positive, collective way where we work together to help ourselves out of the conditions that we're in. And all of us are going to have to do that. And now for my favorite segment, it's the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. Come on, help me welcome him in. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Rock it. Go. Come on. Come on. Oh, there he is. Come on. I see him striking. I see you, Brother George. Come on. Right. Hey, wife. Hey, mom. Hey, friend. Brother George. Welcome to the show. Welcome, 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 brother. We right here. We ain't going nowhere. How are you?
I'm doing good, brother. Thank you, thank you for that introduction. I love it every time.
Thank you, brother.
Yes, sir. Well, today's Kwanzaa principle from the Nguza Saba is Ujamaa, which is cooperative economics. To build and manage our own stores, shops, and other businesses, and to profit from them together. Ujamaa, the symbol depicts two crocodiles sharing a common stomach. They illustrate the fact that we all are interdependent. And our success, in fact, our life, depends upon all of us working together for a mutual benefit. That's deep, brother. You know, that's deep. But, I mean, brother Kevin Land is going to enlighten us today on that topic, and so I can't wait. The Willie List segment, I've read this before, but from time to time, I like to read it again because it gives so much validity to the Willie Lynch concept, why it was done, particularly why it was done in the way that it was done. And that's from the book, The Ruins of Meditation on the Revolutions of Empires and the Law of Nature by Count Bonnet. He makes this statement: there are people now forgotten, discovered while others were yet barbarians, the elements of the arts and sciences. A race of men now rejected from society for their sable skin and frizzled hair, founded on the study of the laws of nature, those civil and religious systems which still govern the universe. A venomous note in which standard authorities are cited seem to prove that this statement is substantially correct and that we are in reality indebted to the ancient Ethiopians, to the fervor imagination of the persecuted and despised Negro, for the various religious systems now so highly revered by the different branches of both the Semitic and Aryan races. I think that that really substantiates the fact why Willie Lynch, or why it was put in the Willie Lynch letter, that you have to be careful not to let them hear anything or experience anything from their past of significance, because the human spirit has a way of recognizing its accomplishments from the past. And so it would probably lead us to do what they see us doing now, which is researching who we are. And that's been going on for over 100 years. And I think that, you know, we need to give credit to our ancestors and to our young scholars of today for continuing to do that research to help our people reconstruct our foundation. So, brother, if you have any questions, it's back to you.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. I totally agree. Great point. Again, get the book. What's the name of that book again, Brother George?
Ruins of Empires. The official title, you hear it called Ruins of Empires, but the official title is The Ruins or Meditation on the Revolutions of Empires and the Law of Nature by Count Bonnet, C.F. Bonnet.
All right.
And this
Count
book
Bonnet.
Is an old book. This book was written in the late 1700s. So by that time, slavery had been in effect for at least a couple of hundred years.
There you go. See if you can get a copy, right? And it is important that we understand our history, right? And try to track it back and do your research, right? Find out who you are, right? Find out what our ancestors have done, and then become the best person that you could be. All right, now for our empowerment question of the week. Are you ready, Brother George?
Yes, sir.
All right. Cooperative economics, Ujamaa. To build and to manage, to profit, and to do that together. What must we do? What's one thing we need to do to develop that cooperative economic peace in our communities?
Well, one of the major things is we have to reestablish the trust amongst our people that was taken away by the slave process. The slave making process took away our trust back there and made us not trust each other. That was a part of the world mission. And it seems like that's still in effect, that our people don't trust each other. And we have to reestablish trust. And so what you do is you build what you call smaller trust circles. And through those small trust circles, you can go into businesses with each other, because that small circle trusts each other. And the more you can expand that circle, the more the trust will expand to results. Because easy trust can be built with results. So hopefully Brother Kevin Ann will speak more on that. So I'm sure he's going to go deeper to his subject. So that's my response, brother.
Thank you, Brother George. Eloquent as ever. Eloquent as ever. The brother spoke on trust. There are some other elements we need as well. To rebuild and to resurrect our people, several things have to happen. One, we have to have trust. We have to then have love and love for each other, commitment to each other, loyalty to, with, and for each other, devotion to each other, to our communities, to our families, to ourselves, to our children, to our wives, to our husbands. Honesty, being honest and integral, or to have integrity for one another, with and for each other. There's faith. Not only do we have to have faith in God, but we're going to have faith in each other. We're going to have to develop that faith, that faith is a bond that we keep with each other. Then is morals. We need to develop a great system for morality within our people, because many of us are lost, to be honest. And then lastly, it's the system of values, a great system, right? It's a system there. Systems are already there. We just have to go back and get them. We're going to have to live those now, right? The principles are out there, but can you live those principles within your life every day, no matter what your faith system is? Are you able to commit to building a community one person at a time? It's African American Empowerment Saturday. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. We got Slido on deck today. Slido's number at slido.com, S-L-I-D-O.com. The number is 327-5354. I'll say it again, 327, slido.com, 5354. Go out there, type in a comment, and you can talk to me on that side. Also, 845-277-9250 is the call-in number. That's 845-277-9250. You can get in online, get in on the conversation. Right? It's always positive and productive, because this empowerment is about education and development. It's not about arguing and fussing and fighting. You say this, and we might not agree. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay to disagree, but educate yourself, right? And some things that you think you know, you may not know, right? Some things you think are the truth may not be the truth. But it's for you to do the research, right? It's for you to grow. It's for you to change, and it's for you to develop yourself. Again, welcome to African American Empowerment Saturday. Call somebody and tell them about the show and what we're trying to do to motivate and empower ourselves to develop economically, politically, socially, culturally, morally, and so much more. And now it's time for our guest presenter today. Brother Akebelin will be talking to us about politics and economics from an African American perspective and more. So let's bring him in the right way. Come on, y'all. Y'all know how to do it. Mm-hmm. Brother Akebelin, bring it. Bring it, brother. Bring it. Oh, yeah. Come on. Bring it. I see you, Sister Danny. Uh-huh. We right here. We ain't going nowhere. We just got to work together. Brother Akebelin, we right here. Welcome to the show, brother. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I used to don't have the phone on speaker. And today I'm going to put it on speaker. So let me know if I come through clear or not. I just need to do that for me. Could you, brother?
All right. You loud and clear.
So far?
Yes, sir.
You hear me now? I'm ready to get started.
All right.
I went to hear a lecture to hear one of our nationally known black psychiatrists speak. Peace be unto her. She said, paraphrasing, President Obama is the most powerful man on the planet. I realized, although she was psychiatrically astute, she was not politically astute, because it was not true that Obama was the most powerful man on the planet. True power brokers aren't seen. The ones with real power can assassinate a U.S. president in broad daylight, and 50 years later, people are asking, who killed John F. Kennedy? For years, I said there would never be a black president in the United States. But then I realized, once you understand the game, they change the rules. Therefore, I changed. When everyone else was skeptical about a black man becoming president of the United States, I said, the next president of the United States would be a black man. How did I know this? I saw a rule change. Nelson Mandela came out of prison and became the president of South Africa. Mandela's vice president was the former president under apartheid. His name was Frederick Wilhelm de Klerk. Mandela's governor of the South African Reserve Bank was Chris Stiles, spelled S-T-A-L-S. He was a former member of the Broederbond Group. The Broederbond developed South Africa's white supremacist nationalist party and its policy of apartheid. Therefore, although Mandela was the head, whites were still in charge of politics and economics. If you've been following me for a while, you know I've been going through seven aspects of people's culture. Those aspects are the following: history, religion, political organization, economical organization, social organization, creativity, which is your arts, music, dance, drama, literature, and all aspects of art. And I will talk about psychology in the future. I went over history. I went over religion about a month ago, and creativity. And we'll go back to those later. However, today, I will be talking about politics and economics. It's not true that if we were united and get our economic situation together, all our problems would be solved. Tell that to the people of Tulsa, Oklahoma, race riot of 1921. They had that economic program together. The problem is we have been attacked in all manner of people's culture. Therefore, I try to be versed in all seven areas: history, religion, politics, economics, social order, creativity, and psychology. Sure, there is subculture like war, law, sex, athletics. However, they fall under those seven aspects of people culture I just mentioned. We'll be looking at those aspects of people's culture from an African perspective, an African cultural perspective, not a Euro-cultural perspective. It's an assault to our ancestors to say we never were united and put our money together to meet our needs. The first chartered black bank in the United States is in Richmond, Virginia. Sadly, people 60 years old or more don't know this. The first chartered black bank in the United States is in Richmond, Virginia. It's on Jackson Street. It's still there, behind Bill Bojangles' statue. It was founded by a black man who, from his picture, looks like Morgan Freeman. His name was William Washington Brown, Brown with an E. The bank is called, I say is called, because the bank is still there. The bank is called the Savings Bank of the Grand Fountain of the United Order of True Reform. The Savings Bank of the Grand Fountain of the United Order of True Reform. It was created on March 2nd, 1888. It got its charter April 3rd, 1889. Although first to get its charter, it was second to open its doors. The first to open its doors was the Capital Savings Bank of Washington, D.C., which opened its doors October 17, 1888. I repeat, Richmond is the first black bank in the United States to get its charter. D.C. Bank, Black Bank, is the first to open its door. We all know Magdalena Walker. But Magdalena Walker's St. Luke's Penny Savings came much later, 1903. In Record County, there's a lake called Echo Lake, E-C-H-O Lake. It's at 5701 Springfield Road, Glen Allen, Virginia. It's now owned by Henrico County. However, Jacob E. Lewis, an African farmer and preacher, in 1909 bought Echo Lake and established it as a recreation area for Africans. There's a plaque in front of the lake telling the story. All this was before Tulsa. All this was, no, that came after Tulsa. That came after Tulsa. There's a plaque in front of the lake, and it tells the story about Jacob E. Lewis. If we, to the African people, had not pulled our money together, had not established a united front, an economic front, and we said this, you're going to be called out in. You're going to be called out on it. The truth of the matter is, we have been attacked in all manner of people's culture. It'd be wise to reverse in all those areas because we have got together economically and we were attacked. We have to get our political agenda together at the same time we establish our economic program. You can't get your economic thing together and not understand politics because whatever you've gained economically, it can very easily be taken away politically. You must learn how to protect it. There's no billionaire I know who hasn't sought political means to protect his money. I'm not talking about guns. ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, is a Jewish international organization. It has lawyers that will protect their own. Even the gangsters, like Al Capone and John Gotti, had political and law enforcement protection. Bill Gates, Elon Musk, and many of the wealthiest among us are not politicians. However, they are bedfellows with politicians. When Bill Gates speaks about climate change and global health, politicians listen. People say, look up. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's Elon Musk, as the comedian said, doing donuts in the sky. Can you, as a common citizen, go out into space and look for a future home for humanity without getting handcuffs put on you? What politicians do you have in your pocket? George coined the phrase earlier, saying interrelated and interdependent. No man is an island. Politics and economics are interrelated and interdependent. It's hard to imagine a big corporation not having influence over public policy. It's also hard to imagine people living in a ghetto as having influence over public policy. So we won't get lost in some intellectual interpretation. A ghetto is a colony. In the colony, people outside your community, quote, control those things necessary for your own survival. We look at a ghetto as geographical. However, if living in a rural area, an urban area, or the suburbs, and you don't control those things necessary for your very own survival, you're in the ghetto. Therefore, when I said people in the ghetto, I wasn't talking about those people over there, as if I could disconnect myself from them. I'm talking about right where we stand, because we don't control those things that are necessary for our very own survival. Definitions. Economics is manufacturing, distributing, and the consumption of goods. As I mentioned earlier, politics and economics are connected. Amuala Kawenga, in his book, Introduction to Black Studies, copyrighted 1982, page 227, defines politics as the art and process of gaining, maintaining, and using power. Kawenga defines politics as the art and process of gaining, maintaining, and using power. The operative word is power. The operative word is power. What you are trying to derive from politics is power. Frederick Douglass said, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. Barbara Sizemore said, and I'm paraphrasing, power is getting someone to do that which they don't want to do. If they were going to do it anyway, you're not exercising power. The Montgomery bus boycott lasted over a year. The system had to be affected economically for the right political decision to be made. The Montgomery Federal Court and the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that any law requiring racial segregated seating on buses violated the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The 14th Amendment was already in the books. It had been in the books since 1868. Unfortunately for us, there had to be another amendment to enforce an amendment already on the books. The United States Constitution. I remember when Africans, blacks, were calling for a new constitution. I was not caught up in that lie. And unapologetically, so. If you want to challenge me on my position later, I'm fine with that. I will state my position. But I did not want a new constitution. Knowing what I know now, I don't want a new constitution. People came to me and said, but Brother Kavanaugh, we didn't have input into the United States Constitution. I am aware of that. They said the Constitution is sticking up. The Constitution is not sticking up. What's sticking up is they are not abiding by the Constitution. As I mentioned earlier, the 14th Amendment was already in the books. They weren't abiding by the U.S. Constitution. The effective date for the U.S. Constitution was 1789. The Constitution currently has 27 amendments. Y'all missed that. Let me say it again. The U.S. Constitution, dated 1789, currently has 27 amendments. Some of you still didn't get it. Let me do it this way. The Constitution is 234 years old. And 234 years has only been amended 27 times. I amended this presentation 27 times in 30 minutes. There are one of two things taking place here. Number one, the framers of the Constitution were far more smarter than myself, so smart that they could foresee into the future, so much so that they would only have to amend the Constitution 27 times. Or, number two, we have been rope-a-doped, and amendments have been replaced with interpretation. It's number two. We have been rope-a-doped, and amendments have been replaced with interpretation. Sure, there are men something less important, like George being able to have pigs in the city, but something substantial that affects our livelihood, like invading our privacy, tapping our phone, no-knock laws, invading Iraq, and coining the phrase enemy combatant. They are not going to leave it up to us to ratify amendments by 3/4 states. Therefore, they interpret. You have far more interpretations than you have amendments. The Constitution is not hurting you. The Constitution no longer serves those who it was intended, the white, wealthy elites. Therefore, they've been circumventing, otherwise going around the Constitution. The U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land. The Constitution is a contract with we, the people. A judge may want to sever a contract between two parties, but his hands are tied. Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1. Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 of the United States Constitution says, no state shall impair the obligation of contracts. No state shall impair the obligation of contracts. The judge's brother-in-law is before him. The judge wants to rule in favor of his brother-in-law against Brother Akebalon. However, Akebalon has a contract. If the judge does not follow the language in the contract, the world is watching, and the judge can be disbarred. Contracts are oral and written. Both are binding. An oral agreement is binding, providing both parties agree they had an oral agreement. However, where one party disagrees, that contract had to be in writing to be enforced. I repeat, an oral agreement is binding if both parties agree they had an oral agreement. But one party says we didn't have an oil agreement. That contract has to be in writing to be enforced. For example, I promised to pay George $500 for paying my house. George paints my house. Come payday, I don't pay George. George takes me to court. The judge asked me if we had an oil agreement. I said, Your Honor, yes, Your Honor. However, I have been out of work. That's why I hadn't paid him. By my own admission, the judge can award George $500. But if I say, Your Honor, I've never met this man a day in my life, the judge doesn't know who is telling the truth. Therefore, the agreement must be in writing for it to be enforced. The U.S. Constitution is a written contract. Orally and among the framers of the Constitution, it was we, wealthy white people, for wealthy white people. However, they couldn't put that in writing. Why? They were the minority and would have my rule and be overthrown. So instead of writing we, white people, wealthy white people, for wealthy white people, they instead wrote, we, in that precious document, we the people. They gave the majority illusion of freedom while I control them all the time. They wrote in their precious document, we the people. Sure, verbally, they didn't intend for blacks, women, and poor whites to be a part of this we the people. However, you can only enforce what is in writing. And they wrote, we the people. They also wrote, all men are created equal. There is a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that states, when parties disagree on what a statute says, the clearest intent is to read it literally. I repeat, when parties disagree on what a statute says, the clearest intent is to read it literally. The word slave, slavery, Negro, colored, and African were not in the original Constitution. But Brother Cavallon, I heard there was, I don't care what you heard, it's not there. Thomas Jefferson had the word slavery in the original draft of the Declaration of Independence. I want to separate the two. The Declaration of Independence is one document. U.S. States Constitution is another. Thomas Jefferson had the word slavery in the original draft of the Declaration of Independence. In that draft, he condemned King George of Britain for imposing slavery on the colonists. But then Jeffries and the other framers struck that clause because it would be hypocritical to say all men are created evil, equal, and then have slaves. It would be hypocritical to condemn King George of Britain and have slaves. So they wrote in code. The colonists couldn't condemn King George for slavery and then have slaves themselves. Therefore, when it got to the U.S. Constitution, they followed suit like they did in the Declaration of Independence and removed the word slave. I don't care what you have been told all your life. Slave is not in the original United States Constitution. The word slave shows up for the first time in the 13th Amendment in 1865. I argue if you read the Constitution literally, you wouldn't have needed the 13th Amendment, but that's another story. Slavery shows up in the 13th Amendment of 1865. The next time I'm here, I'll talk to you about the other 13th Amendment, which a lot of people are not familiar with. Those who would argue that we were slaves according to the Constitution, when I read the sections of the Constitution where it supposedly speaks to us, although I can't see you, raise your hands when you hear the word slave, slavery, Negro, color, and African. I repeat, I will read those sections in the Constitution where it supposedly speaks to us. Remember I said earlier, when parties disagree with what a statute says, the clearest extent is to read it literally. I want to read it to you literally. I want to absorb it literally. If you hear the word slave, slavery, Negro, color, the African, I want you to raise your hand. All right, let's get started. We're in a court of law. Judge Joe Brown is presiding. The plaintiff, the slave master, said he and I had an oral agreement. I will be his slave, and he will be my master. We go to court. I said, Your Honor, I did not agree to be his slave. The judge doesn't know who's telling the truth. I said to the judge, I did not agree to be a slave. The slave master says we had an agreement. Since the judge doesn't know who was telling the truth in his oral contract, the judge says, do you have anything in writing? The slave master says, yes, Your Honor. It's written in the United States Constitution. Now, as I mentioned earlier, when you hear the word, they code switch it. I guess that's the right word. You're using code language. If you hear the word slave, slavery, Negro, color, and African, raise your hand. Article 1, Section 2 of the United States Constitution. It says for representative and tax purposes, the slave master could add to the whole number of free persons and 3/5 of all other persons. If you heard the word slave, raise your hand. All right. Article 1, Section 9. The migration, and importation of such persons shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808. But a tax or duty may be imposed on such importation not exceeding $10 for each person. If you heard the word slave, Negro, color, African, raise your hand. It's 3 sections in the Constitution where it makes reference to us. I call it inference, not reference, inference. Article 4, Section 2. No person held to service or labor in one state shall be delivered up on claim of the party to whom such service or labor may be due. So it's talking about when one escapes from one state to another, those in the other state must serve that person up to the state where that person was served, if it's serving time. Now, I don't have to ask you if you heard the word slave, because I know you didn't hear the word slave. The word slave was not there. You look at the Constitution, you say, that's me. That's me. I look at the Constitution, I don't say that. Because you got white slaves, you got indentured servants, you got, I just don't say that to me. If anything, the Freemason was free and everybody else was enslaved. So I don't say that. Now, this is how you know they realize, well, they know all along what they were doing. Most people have not read the United States Constitution. Far more people have not read the Confederate Constitution. Virginia had more presidents than any other state, and Virginia was a Confederate state. So they knew what was written in the United States Constitution. But when they got the Confederate Constitution, those same framers of the Constitution in those southern states, remember, George Washington came out of Virginia, Thomas Jefferson came out of Virginia, John Tyler came out of Virginia. All these presidents came out of Virginia. So they knew what was written in the original Constitution. We wasn't reading. A Kavanaugh wasn't back there to articulate what was in the Constitution, but I am here today. So when they wrote the Confederate Constitution, those same articles that I just read to you, they changed it. Where they had the word persons, they changed it to slaves. I will read that for you. And then we can open the door for some questions and comments. Here's the Confederate Constitution. Article 1, Section 2. For representation and tax persons, the slave master can add the whole number of free persons and three-fifths of all slaves. Again, if you heard the word slave this time, raise your hand. But we're not talking about the United States Constitution. This is the Confederate Constitution. So if the Confederates had won, they had a living, breathing document that could keep you in slavery forever. And one of those documents I'm going to talk about the next time I'm here is the other 13th Amendment. But if that had been ratified by three, four states, I would not be talking to you now because I'd have shackles on my feet. All right. This is Article 1, Section 9 of the Confederate Constitution. It says, the importation of Negroes, raise your hand when you hear Negroes, African colored slaves, the importation of Negroes of the African race from any foreign country other than a slaveholding state or territory of the United States of America is hereby forbidden, and Congress is required to pass such laws as effective to prevent the same. Congress, let me see, that's the Confederacy. Let me see. No bill of attainder, exporte facto law, or law denying impairment of the right of property in Negro slaves. They're saying that there should be no law that would impair the obligation to have Negro slaves, which means the Confederate one, I would not be talking to you right now. Article 4, Chapter 2, Section 2, it says, no person held to service and labor. No, that's not Confederate. The Confederate one says, the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all the privileges and immunities of citizens in several states, and shall have the right of transit and sojourn in the state of the Confederacy with their slaves and other property. The right of property and state slaves should not be impaired. All this is in the Confederate Constitution. And finally, no slave or other person held to service or labor in any state or territory of the Confederate States escaping shall be delivered upon the claim of said property. So I'm saying that the Constitution is not sticking you. They're not abiding by the Constitution. The Constitution no longer serves the interests of those that it was intended to serve, and that was the wealthy white elite. It has got to the point now where everybody's voting. Everybody participates in this process. With that said, I turn the control back over to Marvin for questions and comments. And I'll do the best I can to answer. If I can't, I'll say I don't know the answer.
All right. All I can say is, all right, brother. That was good. We need more of that, right? That is what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about, right? If you listen to this show, right, you just got a full tank just now, right? Didn't take long, but the brother laid it down, right? And now, again, it's time for you to think about how this system has been navigated and how you can navigate the system as it applies to you in the language of the law. You got to understand the law. You got to understand politics. You got to understand how politics and economics work together. Brother Kevin, thank you for a great, great, great job. Brother George, if you don't have anything, let's go over to Slido real quick. Slido is loaded, loaded, loaded. All right. Brother George, you want to add anything before we go to Slido?
No, go right ahead to Slido.
All right. Slido, this is a really great lecture. This brother is on it. We need part two of this show. All right, so they're asking for you to come back, Brother Kevin, already. All right. If we can get to the questions in Slido, then we'll go to the lines. Y'all out there, 845-277-9250. 845-277-9250. Thank you for joining us on Slido. Slido.com. The number, again, it's not too late. 3275-354. That's 327-5354. All right. Once we know our history, we have a stronger sense of self, is there anything else that we gain? Once again, once we know our history, we have a stronger sense of self. Is there anything else that we gain? What you think, Brother Kebelin?
It's just that history. The brother said history, right?
Yes.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we've been attacked in all manner of people's culture. And on a personal level, the same thing applies to a group level on a personal level. You got to feel good about yourself. And Malcolm said, to hate your mother is to hate yourself. And we hate Africa. But not only I take it to a step farther. As I mentioned earlier, not only should you be well-versed in history, and I'm not well-versed in it, but I know a little bit of ethnic culture, but to be a whole person, we have been attacking all manner of people's culture. And that's why when I come to you, I'm bringing to you history, politics, economics, social, creativity. So the answer is no. If all you know is history, but you don't know politics, if all you know is politics, but you don't know economics, if all you know is economics, but you don't know social order, you're not a whole human being, because they didn't leave anything left for chance. A brother who wasn't a conscious at all, he was a devoted Christian, he came to me and said, Brother Kebelin, why would they give us our religion and take away our name and our language? I said, brother, they didn't. They took away everything. So to answer that question is, you're not going to be whole just studying your history. You need to study your history, your economics, your policy, your social order. I don't mean to belittle anyone, but I've gone to places where people who know Egypt, they know their history, but they don't know politics. I got people in Congress who know politics, but don't know history. I got people who know art, creativity, but they don't know the other aspect of people's culture. So if you study and you're versed in all those manners of people's culture, then you can walk around and accomplish things in life. But you only know one area. You only took out one dagger that they put in you, and you left the other five, six in there. No, you're not going to be whole.
Wow. Thank you, Brother Kebelin. You're listening live to Empowerment Saturday, African-American Empowerement Saturday. 845-277-9250 is the number to call. I'm going into question and answer in just a minute. But back over to Slido. The next question is, what is a good working definition of power for African-Americans?
A good definition of power, that's many. I don't like to be put in a situation where it's either or one thing, right? Use all the tools. Voting is one tool. Get your economic program, that's another tool. Education, that's another tool. There's a whole lot of tools we can use to how we get power, right? Now, I mentioned Barbara Sizemore says power, I forgot that. She says power, I forgot what she said that quick. Anyway, since I can't come up ahead with Barbara Sizemore said at the moment, Malcolm X said something. He said, it's possible to have a bloodless revolution, but history shows us that it ain't likely to happen. You know what I mean? So when you're exercising power, look at history. And you know that most likely there's some blood was shed. We got voting rights. But didn't make Evers have to die? We got the city in the back of the bus. Didn't a lot of people get beat up in those restaurants and cafes and things like that? So we got prepared to understand that when we strive for power, you got to add, you got to be able to defend yourself. Because people are just not going to hand over power. I might have got off track to what the person was saying, but that happens when you're speaking an improper truth off the top of your head. So for right now, we'll let that rest and go to the next question.
All right. Thank you. Hey, I like the answer. All right. Here's the next question. We have to understand the rules of engagement, in this country and the world. What would you consider to be the rules of engagement for African Americans?
These questions seem like a stuff I've already covered in the presentation. I had to think that one over, brother, so I'm not going to waste some time trying to address that.
All right.
I might come back
to
the
next question is, okay, knowledge is power. The more you know, the further you go. Keep teaching, Brother Kebelin. All right. Somebody's encouraged by you.
Oh, well, no. All right. Make sure, long story short. Rules of engagement, whatever they decide to do, go do this opposite. They said step, sit down. They said sit down, you stand up. They said go right, you go left. You know what I mean? So, well, so that way they tell you go just opposite. Go ahead, next question.
All right. All right. All right. Can you share the seven aspects again?
I thought that someone asked me that because I tried to repeat it many times. All right. And you also found it in Coringa's book of Black Studies. History, religion, politics, economics, social order, creativity, psychology. And these are aspects of his culture, but they're also aspects of European culture. We're looking at it from an African culture perspective, not from a European culture perspective. Now, these are the same terms that Neil Fuller uses in his book. But he calls the nine areas of people activity. He adds two more to it. I don't have a book. I have a book in front of me now, but I don't want to take up time looking for that book. But in there, he covers sex, war, education. Marvin mentioned athletics. All those can fall comfortably under those seven areas that I gave you. All those. It's going to fall under socialization. It's going to fall under art. It's going to creativity. It's going to fall under history. It's going to fall under one of those areas. War clearly falls under politics, a means of establishing power. When you mentioned, somebody asked the question earlier. War is a means of establishing power. But voting is a means of establishing power. These are different areas that you can go to try to establish power. But that's those seven things that I mentioned earlier, right? It's 7 to 9, history, religion, politics, economics, social order, creativity, psychology. And then Marvin will, and Marvin always has the tape available to you. That's one good thing about this program. Marvin has the tape available for you if you miss something on the program. Go ahead.
All right. William Washington Brown with the knee. Bank is Brown's Bank. How can we get more information?
Go online, type in William Washington Brown, B-R-O-W-N-E. You will see a thing that says Virginia Encyclopedia. It's going to pop up. When his name pops up, you will see the bank he founded, the Grand Founding United Order of True Reformers. Also, in that same article, you'll find Magdalena Walker. We grew up knowing who Magdalena Walker was, but we don't know who this man was. And he established a bank, insurance companies. It's a whole lot of things that he did. Also, that bank is still in West Virginia on the corner. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe Maggie Walker's Penn Savings Bank is still in Jackson Ward. We know about Maggie Walker. We don't know about William Washington Brown. And the tragic thing about it is that, as I mentioned earlier, most people 60 years old or more have not, in Richmond, have not heard of William Washington Brown, and the bank is here. It's on the corner on Jackson Street. The other night, I listened to a radio program that mentioned, I think Ebenezer, I think that's across the street. I think Ebenezer in the area, right? They mentioned all the things in that area you can see, and they didn't mention William, they mentioned Bojangles statue. They mentioned Ebenezer. They mentioned Maggie Walker. They mentioned that bank. It's the oldest in the United States before Tulsa. Not to say anything negative about Tulsa, but we know about stuff people tell us about. We don't know about stuff until Brother Kavanaugh or somebody come on the program or Bruce Bridges bring it to our attention. Also, since I mentioned Bruce Bridges, they got the same type of economic development in Durham. I don't know the name of that bank. And tragically, I believe a lot of people in Durham don't know, unless Bruce tells them. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to the line.
Where's the comments? Where's the comments?
804.
Where are the comments? Everybody's picking my brain, but where are the comments? I don't mind questions, but I want to know what you learned from the program.
All right. Let's go to the lines. 804-4692. Do you have a question, a comment, a statement for Brother Akebelin? 4692. All right, I guess they're just listening.
Can some lawyers call in?
Lawyers, if you're out there listening, call in. can call in right now. Okay. All right. Let's go back to Slido. We have to reestablish an economic front and insulate it politically. What do you mean by that? What do you think that means, Brother Kebelin, insulating an economic front politically?
If you have an economic, that, if we pull together, like we always talk about on this program, you have economic front together, and we don't have a political front, we can have an autarchy. As I mentioned, you got to defend yourself. If you got some money, you got to have up some means to defend it. It don't mean necessarily mean taking up guns, because you don't see ADL with guns, but say something bad about them. Attack something that is theirs and see don't you hear from them. When you look at those old movies, those Italian the gang members, right? They can protect theirs. So you got to connect the politics with the economics. You can't do one without the other. You can't become, let's say I came over with the invention of how we can fly without an airplane. You think they're going to let me come out there, a black man, with this idea, and I'm not be attacked? I'm going to be attacked. Mm. There could be some stealing going on, and they're going to find some way to make my invention corrupt, or it affect the air somewhere. It may affect the ozone somewhere. So you got to have your political agenda together at the same time. You do them together. It's not one before the other. You do them together. You put your political agenda together while you try to establish your economic program.
That makes sense. All right. Currently, the most unemployed demographic in America is the black teenagers. How can we as black businessmen provide opportunities for our children to earn?
Well, when I used to do volunteer work at Juvenile Correction Center, I tried to put myself in their shoes. I knew that they were thinking about, once they get out, society will cast them aside because a certain infractions committed that led them in Juvenile Correction Center. By me being a foster parent for 12 years, I know that's not true, because if you did anything when you was under 18 years old, the state will allow you to go on with your life. They have no record you did this. They have a record that you molested someone when you was 10 years old as a result of you being molested. They have it on record that you stole something. They have all this on record. I hope I don't lose my point when I'm trying to get to this right. But what happens is, I've educated them and said, no, that's not going with you. That's not going with you, because I've had young folks in my home who were considered sex offenders. They were molested, and in turn they molested someone else. The neighbors don't know about it because the state keeps your stuff protected until you reach a certain age. So now, once I let them know, the society is not going to cast you aside because are those infractions you did as a juvenile, what they will hold you for is, how come you've been locked up for 2 years and you haven't taken advantage of electricity program? You haven't taken advantage of brick masonry. You haven't taken advantage of plumbing. All these classes that you had, that's the part they don't understand, right? So I tell people, right, find a business for yourself using your hands. That way, and George can attest to this, and Mark can attest, they know some people who got skills with their hands. And so what happens is, you can go to someone for employment, but if they don't hire you, you still no electrician. You still no plumbing. You still no brick mason. You still no brick mason. So not just young people, but all people, right? You should find a skill with your hand. So when size catch you aside, and that's why I mentioned we're in the ghetto, because when somebody gets a pink slip, and when a young folks doesn't have the opportunity available to him, right? We don't have things in motion to provide for them. So whether you're in an rural area or urban area or suburbs, you still in the ghetto. If somebody said, I don't need you no more, here's a pink slip, I don't need you no more, they should be able to go to a black institution to be hired. If someone says, I'm not going to give you this loan, you should be able to go to a black institution like Black Wall Street and like Maggie Walker Center Savings, like all those things back. We had those things back then, but we don't have it today. So there's no such thing that it can't happen, because it happened before, it can happen again. But that's what I would do to answer that question is, find a skill with your hands. I'm not against further education, but find a skill with your hands. So if boss says, I don't need you no more, you got plumbing skills, you can go ahead and business for yourself.
All right. Thank you, Brother Kevin. 845-277-9250. Call-in line is wide open. Slido at slido.com. 3-2-7-5-3-5-4. I'm going to bring Brother George in for a minute. Brother George, why don't you take this next slide, if you don't mind. How can we develop political and economic power as African Americans?
Now, they talk
well,
about that? Oh, you asked George. We're talking George. Oh,
yes,
yeah,
sir.
I think I've talked a little bit about that during Willie List segment. But, you know, Brother Kevin Lang has hit this, you know, like nail right on the head. And it makes it very difficult a lot of times for our people to swallow, you know, such a bitter pill. You know, it's hard to accept our shortcomings. You know, it's hard to accept our shortcomings. And we haven't grabbed that brass ring of power. And, you know, I really would like, if Brother Kevin doesn't mind, I'll give Dr. Leonard Jeffries' definition, working definition for power. Dr. Jeffries said that power is the ability to define what reality is and have others accept it as though it was their own. Power is the ability to define what reality is and have others accept that definition as though it were their own. And I think that based on that definition, I'm going to use that as my foundation, that we've been caught up in that. We've been allowing, you know, the overall culture and some other foreign cultures to define what reality is for us, and we've accepted it as though it was our own. And to give you an example, it's really hard-pressed to talk to our people and tell our people that we were the scientific-minded people of the world. I mean, we have to go through some real serious stuff with proof that almost, you know, it's like unimaginable that we could really get our hands on it to prove to them that we're the people that those books are talking about. They use the term Negro. They talk about the time period. They talk about where we came from. They talk about every single thing. And it would be easy in no limited time for a statement to be made about a European accomplishment or culture and someone just stated. They don't have to have no books or no backing or nothing. And it's believable to us because we're still under their power. And we have to change. We have to seriously change that dynamic. And I think that what Brother Kevin spoke of, the seven areas of cultural activity that they have dominated us in and taken from us, we have to either take them back or rebuild them in a positive way to be able to begin to achieve the things. Well, I think that we're on that path. I don't want to completely discount the fact that we've done absolutely nothing, because that would not be true. But we're going to have to do it at a much quicker pace, because I'm looking at the course of the direction that this country is going in, and I'm not sure that we're prepared enough to bring ourselves successfully a large majority of us to the other side of it. And it has to do with our knowledge of those seven areas of culture that's been taken away from us. It has to do with that. And so we need to start doing some study, some research into who we are, what we've done, what we like, what we don't like, how sick we were when we came here, to justify that we didn't come over here with high blood pressure and diabetes and all of that, and that it's related to our diets. It's just a lot that we have to do. But I don't want to try to dominate Brother Kevlan's show, because that ain't possible.
Well,
anyway.
I want to comment. Yeah, Can I say something, Marvin?
Absolutely.
Can I say something, Marvin? All right. I like what George said. That's why I like comments, right? Because when somebody comments, right, it gets my head to going, right? All manner of people's culture is connected. We talk about abolitionists. We think about white abolitionists. We don't think about the power that Nat Turner had to do and those that came before him, right, that caused slavery to be abolished. They always contributed to white abolitionists. But if you wake up one morning, you see Nat over the top of your head, you say, wait a minute, there's a whole lot of mindsets like this. We got to change this system, right? And to tell you how everything's connected, right, history and politics is connected. If you get the right history, you can empower yourself. For example, we just had Juneteenth. I had a problem with this for years, right? They said for 2.5 years, Africans did not know that there was an Emancipation Proclamation. I had a problem with that from day one. Because you got abolitionists, you got the Underground Railroad, you got newspapers out there, and you're trying to tell me 2.5 years, they didn't know that there was an Emancipation Proclamation. I'm inclined to believe it happened this way. When you're in war, you got to attack the governor. You got to take the governor's office. You got to take the treasury. You got to take out all those things, right? So Texas is a big area. If you don't see any Union soldiers in your area, you can't go nowhere. Even if you said you were free, you still can't go nowhere because you don't. So what happens is they knew about the Emancipation Proclamation. But you can't go nowhere because all you see is Confederate soldiers. You don't see no Union soldiers, right? Now, if we flip the narrative, that would empower us. The narrative they gave us, that General Granger came and freed us. That's the narrative that we got, right? As if we wasn't doing anything during that whole process to liberate ourselves, except for that condition right there, you couldn't go anywhere because you got Union soldiers. Confederate soldiers. Once the Union soldiers came, you still just can't go. For example, if I say right now, Mamil Abdul-Jamal, you're free. You can go home in those prisons in Pennsylvania. He still can't go. He can't go until his boys come and guard the premise, guard the area, right? So it's all connected. If you get the right history, that can also empower you. That give you direction where to go. So all manner of people's culture, as George mentioned earlier, about interrelationship and interdependency, everything's connected. These aspects of people's culture are not independent of one another. They are interdependent on one another. The history is connected to your religion. Religion is connected to your politics. Your politics is connected to your economics. Economics is connected to your social order. They're all connected.
That's a great point, brother. That's a great point. You're listening live to African American Empowerment Saturday. We got Brother Kevlan in the house, understanding African American politics and economics as we continue our discussion. All right, go back to Slido. And this question is, Black America has voted Democrat for the last 100 years. Should blacks leave the Democrat/Republican parties?
Oh, that's a good question there. All right. Now, if you study politics, you know that Ross Perot was leading George Bush and Bill Clinton. I mean, he was kicking their butt. But then they did something about Ross Perot's daughter. I think she was getting married. They tried to bring something out. So Ross Perot got out of the race. So the question is, if Ross Perot had stayed in, would he have beaten George Bush and Bill Clinton? Well, they got their political agenda together. Republicans and Democrats, they argue all the time, they fight all the time. But when a strong independent candidate comes in there, they stop fighting to get that independent candidate out of there. And once that independent candidate is out, they get back to fighting again. So I'm thinking, what would happen if Perot had stayed in and won? He won by a slim margin. He beat George Bush and Bill Clinton. He could still lose in Electoral College. see how they got their political agenda together? If we don't get an independent candidate has to get so many votes in all the states on the ballot. Republican Democrats don't have to do that. You don't see Republican Democrats knocking on your door, so on and so, but let an independent candidate come, right? And the parties get money, but Republican Democrats, they get so much money, but an independent candidate has to get so many votes, so many states, and probably all 50, in order to be on the ballot, right? They make it hard. Anytime you hear about a strong independent candidate, like Ross Perot, Forbes, what's that guy, Ralph Nader, these people already had the money, so they didn't need any money. But that's not what Marvin to run. Marvin doesn't have any money. So I don't know how people all 50 states going to know who Marvin is. But if Marvin pulled that thing off and he won a close race, Republican and Democrat, not saying they will, but they couldn't steal it. They can't steal it in the Electoral College because they had that thing fixed when they came up with the Constitution. They had that thing fixed. Now, I think we shouldn't focus so much on Democrat and Republican as we do issues. So I think that the Republican Party is going to have to make some changes. They're going to have to make some changes because and all of them are not don't follow Trump. They're going to have to make some changes. So I've been voting independent for the longest time, but I do know that it's a tough road because they got to think so that it's even hard for independent candidates to get in there. But to answer your question, a lot of us have been voting independent for a long period of time. And that's the reason why there haven't been much success. Should we entertain the Republican Party? Well, Republican Party was a party for blacks at one time because of Dishonest Abe. I call Dishonest Abe. I don't call him Honest Abe like most of you do. I call him Dishonest Abe. When I come back again, I'll tell you why I call him Dishonest Abe, and I can prove it to you. He tried to keep us a slave for the rest of our life. I don't have time to talk about it today, but next time I come, I will. So to answer that person's question,
okay.
Party issues. Party issues, not so much what party it is.
I agree. I think we need to use those parties for our best game, right? How can we be with the Democrats when we need them and they following our agenda? And then how can we be with the Republicans when they're following our agenda? And if they need us and we can figure out how to leverage that relationship, I think we can put ourselves in a stronger position because our votes do matter in this system. All right, let's keep going. 845-277-9250 is the number. All right, Slido, again, we must understand and begin to effectively navigate every aspect of this system. And you laid them down, Brother Kevin Lynn, but I know you mentioned it, but I want to go back to why is that important? Why are these pieces so important? And how important are or is it to our listeners that each of these areas work together?
It's just as important as you have one arm rather than two arms. one leg rather than two legs. And you will walk around limp, and you won't, you know. And I got people that just don't have those areas together. When it comes to religion, for example, right, it's holding them down. Because I might think it's morally correct for somebody to harm me and my family. I might think it's morally correct to take them out. But your religion might say turn the other cheek because, so it depends. And so we got to get all those pieces together to be a whole human being, and not just one. And I can go through people, right? I go national people in our community that we love, and they got their history down pat. But ask them about those other six areas, right, and you see they got shortcomings. And I remember something that George, I'm sure George was there. Francis Quest Wells, and I ain't gonna take too long. Francis Quest Wells, our black psychiatrist, peace be unto her, spoke at the Family Resource Center. And she said, if money was our problem, we should be straight. We got plenty of money. If politics was our problem, we should be straight. We got black governors, black mayors, a president of the United States, right? You know what I mean? She went through all the aspects of his culture, and she pretty much said, which made me came up with my conclusion to study all of the areas. She said, we have been attacked in all areas of people's culture, not just one. So if you want, you just want to address one area and focus on one area, you can walk around with a limp because you're not whole. You need to be versed in all those areas. And I don't know everything that is about all those areas, but I know enough to get by. You know, I don't know law. I'm glad somebody asked me the questions of law, but I am 6-0 in civil litigation. I am 6-0 in civil litigation because I always use the Constitution. Right. And whatever constitution you choose, whatever contract you got, you ain't going to jump over this one.
True. All right. Thank you, Brother Kevin. Last question and then final comments. The illusion of freedom. Can you speak to that? Is that something truly we need
the
to think about?
Freedom.
The illusion of freedom.
When they said we the people, they have you thinking we the people make decisions. They always call this a representative democracy, where the people pick their representatives and representatives represent them, right? So that's why I said the illusion of freedom. So people that got freedom say they got freedom because they got picked representatives and representatives. I don't have anything wrong with that, right? The problem I have with you different is representation without consultation. What they're doing, they're saying, we could take money out of Social Security and balance the budget. George don't mind. They said because George voted for them, they can act independent of George wishes. My thing is, I'm going to go to the people first and say, I'm going to rule this way. Do you like the way I'm ruling this way? That's the way to do it. When the United States was trying to annex Hawaii to the United States, they went to Queen Lili Ukalano. They said, we want Hawaii to be part of the United States. She said, let me talk to my people first. And those women, this is a monarchy. You're a queen. Or you can say, so it be, and it be. She said, well, no, I represent the people. I'm going to go to them first. Tell them about the decision I'm about to make and see if they approve. But that's the problem I have. We have illusion of freedom. They are voting independent of your wishes. They're not asking you if you like the way they're about to vote because they know you could disagree. That's just going to, so they'll give you the illusion of power, not that you have real power. That's what I mean when I said that.
All right. Thank you, Brother Kevin. Great job. Great show. Once again, they're asking for you to come back for a part two. We'd love to have you back so you can continue to answer some of those questions and stimulate thought in the minds of our people. So, again, thank you. Excellent job. And, again, those critical areas, can you speak to those before you go? What are those seven areas again?
History, religion, politics, economics, social order, creativity, your music, art, dance, drama, literature, and social and psychology. Art is important because the conscience of a people is carried through the music. And it should be exhibited in all manner of art, the painting, the drawing, sculpture. So.
All right. Thank you,
can
brother.
Do a
we appreciate
the
you, brother.
On the people by listening to the music. The music will tell you whether we're whole or not, or whether we live in a decadent society. And thanks for inviting me, brother.
Brother George, final comments.
I'm good, brother. I just appreciate what Brother Kevin Land did for us today. That was a great lecture, brother. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brother Kevin Land. Thank you, Brother George. Thank you for listening. Always continue to reach. Strive to be the best person that you can be so you can make the world better for the people that are coming behind you. Until next week, thank you. Thank you. Peace and blessings. And have a great week. African American empowerment.